All right, welcome in. This is 300 Yards to Unknown. I'm Rick Gaiman. That right there, the one, the only Eric Patterson, who you can find at EPAT Golf. EPAT, what up, dude?
Not much, Rick. Happy to be here. Not happy that I already see the PGA Tour scoring leaderboard is already down for the day. So a tough start for the crew in La Quinta.
Mid-season form, PGA Tour scoring is down. The app apparently is up and running. The rickrungood.com live leaderboard is up and running. But even the stuff that's coming in, I was telling you, I guess they had one of Doc Redman's holes incorrect, so they took a birdie off the board for him. I mean, it's just you never know what to trust out there. You can't get too excited when you see a guy go a couple under to start the day at the Nicklaus course.
Nothing like one of the richest of sports organizations in North America not being able to figure out their scoring, but it's an ongoing theme with our friends over at the tour.
What might help is if they did these every single week, you know, they might get into
a bit of a flow.
Yeah, get into a routine. Right. You know, figure it out from week to week, learn from your mistakes, all that good stuff. So I think they should have these, I don't know, call it 50 times a year, and really, really start figuring this out. So hopefully one day they'll be able to take us up on that.
That's the dream. We'll get there one day. Yeah.
This episode, what we dedicated, our time to was the Tiger documentary on HBO, which aired over the course of the past couple of weeks in a two part segment. So that was our plan. We're still going to do that. We're going to come on here. But a little monkey wrench to start off the ep here, EPAT, because we got news this week that Tiger Woods underwent a fifth, count them, five back surgeries, this time to alleviate a pressurized disc fragment in his back that was causing pain, pinched nerve, all that good stuff. So we'll get into that a little bit, but your initial reactions to Tiger Woods once again under the knife.
Not a headline, not a news story you want to write or read. It was a quiet Tuesday, and then boom, the little late Tuesday news dump, the Tiger went under the knife for the fifth time on his back is not what you want to hear. I was actually getting ready for him to announce that he was going to be playing next week at the Farmers. I was getting excited for Tiger's return. This is when Tiger kind of gets going, this and then Genesis. And now, he didn't really say when he's going to be back. Rory's indicated that he might be back, hopefully back for the Masters. But yeah, this is definitely concerning, although a lot of people are saying at the same time that it's expected too, because of how his back was put together and just his age, that there are going to be parts of it that wear down and just kind of comes with the territory.
You were actually, as you always are, out in front of this a bit. So you actually tweeted out a video from the PNC Championship where Tiger and Charlie are on the driving range warming up, and he kind of takes this little awkward swing, gives up on the shot, doesn't hit a ball, winces and kind of walks back to his bag. And we come to find out now a few weeks later that yes, indeed, that back pain was felt at the PNC Championship. So you were almost foreshadowing this a little bit as you tend to do, Eric.
Well, yeah, he does wins from time to time, and obviously he has discomfort more than he probably leads on to. It just, I remember when him and Charlie, they announced that they were going to play together. And I think I came on here and just asked kind of why now, because it did seem a little forced. It seemed rushed, almost out of nowhere. Even after like a season where he didn't play great, he missed the Players because of injuries. So these lingering effects have been kind of going on for a while. And I thought about why now, and maybe this is why, because maybe he knows that the end is near or something, because it did seem forced, and unfortunately now he's going under the knife again. It definitely sucks.
Yeah, it does suck. You mentioned that some people have been describing this as not necessarily surprising. Obviously a big deal, but not necessarily surprising. There was a really good write-up in the I'm going to get this wrong, so I'm not even going to say it. There was a really good article, I think it was the New York Times, do not quote me on that, from when he had that spinal fusion surgery a couple of years ago. And essentially it was like, yeah, like this is a really great procedure for like your average person, not necessarily your professional golfer who wants to swing hard and put a bunch of torque on it. And then also, it is not a miracle worker, right? It is not a miracle cure, and there will continue to be deterioration, and there may be more procedures in the future. And this would be the first back procedure since that point. So that is what you're saying when you say this is not necessarily surprising. I assume that's where your head is at.
Yeah, I think Daniel Rappaport from Golf Digest, he put together an article just outlining that this was almost expected, that more surgeries are going to be needed because, like you said, that fusion surgery, I don't know everything about it, but I'm pretty sure that's supposed to get people up and moving again, maybe have, you know, have a dad play with their kids or something so they aren't right. constantly in chronic back pain. It's not for a guy to come back and put in, you know, play 20 tournaments a year and keep swinging as ferocious as Tiger does from time to time. It's just that's not what the surgery is for, and now he's feeling the you know, the impacts of doing what he's doing. But I pray that he can come back and play again, because I know we were on borrowed time with Tiger when he started coming back in 2018, and this is almost more of like a wake-up call as to that, you know, that is the truth now. This is borrowed time. This is in the final chapter of his career, and we just have to take every start with you know, almost, you have to, like, you got to look and remember that we're actually lucky to be getting this part of this side of Tiger and these events out of Tiger.
Yeah. And the statement that's released, I guess, in combination from Tiger and his agent, you know, it outlines the kind of a lot of stuff that we've talked about already. And there was one phrase in there that I thought was interesting, and it says Tiger's expected to make a full recovery, which, great. That's awesome. I love it. That's what you want to hear. But to your point, what is a full recovery? He's 45 years old, which is the wrong side of 40 when you are a professional golfer. He's had 5 back surgeries. He did not play well in 2020. He withdrew from the Players because his body wasn't ready. His words, not mine. So what is a full recovery? And is there ever going to be a point that we do not have the highest of expectations for Tiger Woods, right? I mean, expectations for him is when he plays, he's supposed to win. I've kind of been off of that. Like, I'm in your boat, Eric, which is like, wow, just enjoy it. Just enjoy that he's playing the Masters. Just enjoy that he's out there and he goes off and rattles off a bunch of birdies in a row, and he might not be able to put it together. But I think we seriously need to adjust our expectations.
And yeah, they were obviously getting high. Late last year, those expectations for me started to kind of dwindle, but I think most people weren't really on board with that yet. They were just, you know, attributing his lack of results, his poor results, to a lack of play, a lack of practice, but now there's probably more to it. And if he does come back this year again, if he can just stay healthy and have fun doing it, and if he wants to shut her down whenever he wants to shut it down, we got to be okay with that. I'm prepared for that. If he doesn't ever make a full recovery from this, again, I have no clue what it goes into a back surgery, but 5 of them seems like 5 too many.
I don't think we will ever get a Tiger Woods like, okay, this is my last tournament. It's been really fun. Like that victory lap that sometimes you see other athletes take, you know, Derek Jeter got a full season's worth of farewell tours and guys in other sports, you know, saying, okay, this is my last go around. I don't think we're ever going to get that.
No, you don't really have that in golf ever, really. Like, Tiger's going to play, if he plays one tournament a year for the next, I don't know, 10, 15 years, it's going to be the Masters. And that's the only time we see him. And that could be cool, but that's just kind of how golf works. You just wind down the calendar very slowly until you're like, I don't know, Jack's age, when he started shutting it down into his 70s and just says, yeah, this is definitely too much. But yeah, rarely does a guy just, you know, finish a tournament and walk away. So I'm not really expecting that, but I am, you know, he was playing, I don't know what, 9-10 events. Maybe he only starts to play 4 or 5 a year. It just, I think that's the next step for him.
And I also think, and this is kind of a natural transition into the documentary a bit, the way that this dude's wired, like, I still think that he thinks he's going to break Jack's record. Like, for sure. You know what I mean? So I don't think that, like, you know, we talk about expectations, and every time he's going to be asked a question, he's going to be like, oh, my expectations for this week? Yeah, winning. Like, that's what I'm here to do. So he's not going to, I don't think he's going to just like, okay, shut it down. Like if he, I think, here's the thing. I think if he had 19 majors right now, he'd shut it down.
Oh, and, yeah, 100%.
You know what I mean? And he is chasing glory. He is chasing the idea of him being the greatest of all time. And this is like the only, you know, he's got to get to 83 and he's got to get to 19. And it, I just, that's what I think is going to keep a lot of this happening every year, right? 5-6 times a year, we're going to see him. He's going to try to win a major or two in the next couple of years. And it's just like, we're going to have stories like this.
He should honestly just play the Masters and the Open, because I think he's proven the last couple of years the U.S. Open's not his jam anymore, and probably the PGA, they're just trying to venture into that long bomb and gouge type stuff too. So the Open and the Masters twice a year, mix in the Memorial, mix in Genesis, and that's the schedule until he's 50.
I need him to play like, I don't even know. I was gonna say the 3M Open. I need him to get to 83, right? Like I need him to get to 83. I actually don't even think the 3M Open is the spot, because like the harder it is, I think it's the better for Tiger. Like it's gonna be, listen, the guy's had an unbelievable career. We'll talk about all that. But like if he sits on 82 and 15 and that's it, the wiki page in 10 years is 82 and 15, I'd hate to see it.
Really? For me, 82, like that's fine. He matched the record. He has plenty of other records that he can claim. I don't think he needs to beat Sneed's record. I don't know. I don't think that even matters to him, to be honest.
I don't know.
Some of the tournaments that Sneed won doesn't, okay. You can chalk up some of those victories. They're like one round tournaments. So like what, yeah. 82 is a made up kind of fictitious number.
I was going to say the argument is that Tiger's 82 is infinitely. Like I don't even know how you'd quantify it, because you're right. Some of those Sneed wins are 18 hole guys that are like, you know, their day jobs are not golfers. They're not golfers.
Exactly.
So yes, of course it is completely different, but I would just love to have his name be on the podium without anybody else.
I just don't want, truthfully, I don't want his last win to be the Zozo Championship in Japan that no one really watched. I don't know. Wow. That just doesn't really sit. It was a one-off in Japan. Nothing against Japan, but like swing season event. Just like
it was in the middle of the night too.
It was so, it was anticlimactic. It just wasn't a. I don't know. Tiger needs to win on a Sunday in the summer in the States for me. I don't know. I'm picky.
The doc, you know, the one thing that there were so many good things about the doc, and we can talk about all of them, but the one thing that was so jarring is, and I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but there was a moment where I was like, okay, he's at 45 wins and he's 33
or something. They said that, and I think that was after, I guess, I don't know what year Tiger turned 33, but it was after an injury, maybe after 2008.
It would have been like, so his birthday is like Christmas time. So if he was, it would have been like 2007 or 2008, something like that.
Yeah. Like, and I was like, damn, he was 33 then. And he already had all those wins. And yeah. You think about 33-year-olds now on the PGA Tour, like DJ's older than 33 and he's still cleaning up. And then, so that window for Tiger, that like 34 to 40 window, when you're really supposed to be making almost, sometimes for some people, that's like the peak of their career. That's, you know, that's like when they kind of max out, and Tiger was away from the game and struggling at that stage. So it was very surprising.
Yeah, it was. And yeah, that my ears perked up when they said that. And I always go back to, there was, I can't remember what tournament it was. I think it was the Arnold Palmer Invitational. I don't remember what year, but Tiger Woods, makes the putt to win on the 72nd hole. And Jim Nance is on the call, and he says, "The drought is over." The drought was 8 events. He played 8 events without a win. That was the drought. Could you imagine those words being used to describe an 8 event stretch without a victory? Like that, the talk about expectations, talk about what this guy was doing. I think that's the perfect example of it.
Eight events, that's like 3 months for Tiger. So that would, I mean, that would like be a drought for him. He's winning every other time he played. But yeah, you can go the long list of Tiger's the first to reach this, the first to reach that, youngest to do this. It's extremely long. And you know, that documentary, if we want to start talking about that, touches on a lot of those things, starting when he was like 14, playing in the LA Open. Just again, if you haven't watched it, please like stop this video right now and go watch parts one and two, like clear your schedule.
Yeah. So, these came out over the course of the past couple of weeks. HBO, each episode's about 90 minutes. So it's about 3 hours or so of content. And the first, part one to me, Eric, was very much about the foundation, the relationship with Earl Woods. And literally as Tiger comes out of the womb, Earl starts to mold, right? And he starts to, kind of figure out and train Tiger and turn him into what he's going to be. And then, you know, part two, which we'll get into, is kind of the now Tiger's all grown up and he's kind of living with these things that Earl might have taught him. And then we get into the cheating scandals, the affairs, the partying, whatever it all that is. But let's start with part one here. I mean, I knew that Earl Woods played a huge role in this, but maybe I had forgotten or didn't realize, like, even the expectations then, like this guy's like Earl Woods saying he's going to change the world. He's going to be like Gandhi. He's going to be like,
that was big.
Like literally
Muhammad Ali is Gandhi.
Transcending golf, which is crazy because that's true. That happened. To say that about like a 2-year-old or like a 6-year-old or whatever it was, like, it's crazy. But then to be like, yeah, he's going to be the biggest philanthropist ever. He's going to be remembered with Gandhi. Like that's the expectation that your father's putting on you.
So yeah, part one was a lot about Earl and obviously his influence on Tiger. And you know, when you look back at Tiger's career and kind of the person he is and the things he did, I do attribute a lot of those to, you know, what Earl taught him or showed him, or you know, kind of a lot of the ways Tiger just kind of emulated his dad. And even when his father was gone, it was just, you definitely see the commonality, the similarities between the two. And yeah, like that part one was almost like a bash piece on Earl because it dove into like Earl, like, man, they brought that like assistant pro on at the Army course. And like, they talked about Earl's Winnebago and they would just be like, they would be having a lesson and then him and this assistant pro would go have cocktails in the Winnebago while Tiger's on the putting green. And like from a young age, Tiger was exposed to what affairs are about, like having a father just kind of going behind his mom's back and doing stuff like that with whoever they could find at the golf course. Like it was like, you almost have sympathy for Tiger. Like I don't know how old he was, 12 years old, 13 years old. He's seeing his dad do this and seems perfectly normal. He kind of idolized his dad. And then it makes a lot of sense when Tiger's 27, 28, 30, married, have a couple kids that, you know, he's the most famous athlete in the world and he's doing a lot of the same thing. So like that part of the story just obviously stuck out. Like you can bash Tiger for doing all those terrible things to Elon, but at the same time, he learned it from his dad.
Yeah. And you hear, okay, you know, my dad's my idol. He's my best friend. He's everything. That's what Tiger's saying as he's growing up. The part one was certainly, you know, you talk about, you know, what was this doc? Was it salacious? I don't think so. Was it factual? Sure. Of course. But it was almost an Earl Woods hit piece. He's cast as the villain in this, right? I mean, that's the villain.
He's like, yeah, he created this machine, but didn't mold like a human type thing. Like he just built him up to play golf, but have no other real skills or, you know, like his girlfriend was like,
yeah,
the experiences they would have together and how she talked about, I think they went to like either like a bowling alley or a movie theater. And like, that was something Tiger had never done before. So like they were, I don't know, in high school and Tiger was experiencing so many new things for the first time. And then you get this like bizarre breakup where Tiger clearly was like, I don't even know if Tiger wrote it or what, who wrote it, but he signed it probably word for word out of his parents' mouth to break up with her. And it was just like the amount of control, like they're also have the, There was also like a line where Earl's talking about how, you know, if Tiger wants to go into bowling, or he mentioned a few other sports, like, we'll let him do that. And like, I truthfully don't think that was ever the case. Like, Tiger was going to be a golfer as soon as Earl fell in love with the game.
And then also, once he kind of became a golfer and he had that teacher who was like, oh, why don't you let him play other sports? And Earl was like, nah, he's got to focus on golf. That's what he's,
it's like a, on. That's, and you see that now with like a lot of, at least up here, like you can get some pretty controlling parents for their kids' hockey careers, and they're like 8 years old, and like only thing they do is play hockey, and they all throughout the summer they're playing hockey. They're only hanging out with their teammates. So like, Earl's not the only parent who's ever done this to a kid before.
Right. Unfortunately, this happens a lot, and a lot of them don't end up being Tiger Woods or anything close to it. And you just don't hear those stories because they don't end up turning out that way. The note, right? So his, like, I guess, first long-term-ish girlfriend, they were like, were together in high school or whatever, went to prom. What's her name? Dina, right? I think is her name.
Yeah.
So gets this breakup letter, which, almost certainly Earl is dictating over his shoulder word for word that, like, hey, I need to focus on other things that are not you, which is an incredible thing to happen anyway. But also, this woman keeps this note for however long. How much do you think if she put that note up for auction right now after this doc, how much could she get for
that? Would fetch a lot. Six figures, probably. Yeah. A nice, it is crazy to think about, but I mean, that girl, obviously she was, she talks about it at the end of part two, how she watched the Tiger DUI video. Like, she obviously is still emotionally attached to Tiger and knows a different side of Tiger that no one else does. And those are some of like my favorite parts of the documentary, is like Tiger getting ready for prom and just being like a goofy kid, like things we've never seen before. So you knew the kid was in there. He just never really had a chance to be one. So, and the only time he could was at his girlfriend's house. So, there was almost that rebellious aspect or part of his, who he was from an early age. Like he had one life at home, and he had one life when he was with his girlfriend or out with his friends. And that's something that he kind of takes with him for, almost for the rest of his life, I guess.
I guess I'm not surprised that they were able to get her on. They were able to get Stevie Williams on, which apparently, from what I understand, reading some of the articles that were written about, that took months to get them and like convince them that like this story should be told. I don't know if they were compensated for it. I don't know if
I would assume they were.
I mean, they have to be, right? It's HBO. Yeah. HBO's got a bunch of money. Why would you go on and say that stuff? But even still, I thought that Dina, I thought that Stevie Williams, even some of these people that he might have wronged, they still seemed pretty loyal, and they still seemed like they had good things to say. I mean, Stevie Williams, who was fired by Tiger's agent, right? Like, pretty cold, and apparently they do not talk much or have not spoken since. And I think Tiger was Stevie Williams' best man. Is that what I heard?
Yeah, that's like Tiger has a history of just cutting people off. And these people who have been cut off almost have sympathy for him, because in a way they probably don't believe that Tiger was the one making that final call. He's always had a team around him, people directing him and to do certain things or say certain things. And starting with Dina, I don't think Tiger made that call. I'm not sure if Tiger made the Stevie call. There was another girl in there. I forget her name, but she was a friend of Tiger's that hasn't heard from him in years. I think early in his career, that, again, someone he's just completely removed from his life. So Tiger keeps his bubble small, and if you're not talking to him anymore, they're going to talk on an HBO documentary, I guess.
Yeah, I guess after the car accident, he changed his phone number, wiped it, and then only, it was almost like a clean slate. The guy almost like tried to hit the reset button and clean slate this thing. And then, you know, part two is very much about the affairs, right? And him going to Vegas and being with, you know, Michael Jordan and Charles Barkley and hanging out with escorts in the six figures and all that good stuff. And having these relationships, and it seems like, so it centered a lot around Rachel Yucatel, who is the main name that you get out of this, right? That's when kind of all this news broke that Tiger was having an affair, and she very much thought they were, you know, in a relationship, in a loving relationship, and I kind of got the vibe that he's might be saying a lot of that similar stuff to a lot of women.
That's that one. There was one girl who went on like national TV after and like said that she loved him. And I don't think they're the only ones. And they talked about that a bit, how Tiger, well, he wasn't just, you know, sleeping around and you know, moving on and turning the page or never talking to them again. He was forming some relationships with these people. So he had like six or a handful of them at the same time. And they were almost disappointed to learn that they weren't the only ones. So it was like, everyone was kind of getting cheated on at the same time. So it was, I mean, I didn't know, truthfully, I didn't know about the first girl, the Perkins waitress.
Yeah. Like by his house, right? Like the Perkins in Florida by his place.
And they covered that up with a Men's Health magazine appearance or whatever it was. That was insane. And because National Enquirer was run by the same publication of Men's Health. So I forget what year that was, but a year or two before, like people knew about it. Tiger's team knew about it, swept it under the rug with a free cover shoot, and then obviously couldn't really help himself and had to keep it going.
The National Enquirer, which is obviously known for its very salacious and, from what I understand, most of the time, straight fake. Up false. Just like fake things. So like, honestly, if a story came out about Tiger Woods having multiple mistresses on the National Enquirer and I saw that in the grocery store, I'd be like, okay. Like, and because the next headline is Tom Hanks saw aliens. Like, you know what I mean? Like it's
right. They did that for a 2 day window. They convinced Elon that the National Enquirer story was completely false. Because 2 days later, the car accident happens, and then they cut to like a news reporter, and they're like, a few days ago, the National Enquirer put this on the front of their page. So we don't know if these are related, but turns out it was. So yeah, part two was definitely, they talked a lot about it. They did talk a lot about the golf too, like his injuries, which I found, I mean, I didn't realize that Tiger was that deep into Navy SEALs training. And like after the death of his father, he was like, I knew he hung out with them, but I didn't really realize he was, you know, in there doing some of like the combat drills and getting hurt and taking a beating. And they said that his left knee was the one that kept getting hurt and injured. And then you realize that the same one that he was hobbling around on at the US Open. So Stevie said it too, like, you know, injuries are self-inflicted. I don't know what he was doing, but this is all on him, really.
Self-inflicted could have been, honestly, that could have been the name of this documentary, right? I mean, Stevie Williams, the injury, used that word to describe the injuries just as you are describing. The Navy SEAL stuff is crazy for like a top athlete to put himself through that. And also, you know, my wife and I were talking about this, and it was just like, I don't know how I feel about, you know, feel for Tiger after this. Like a lot of it we knew. I don't feel sorry for the guy. Like I do not. It's all, you know, it's all self-inflicted. I guess the only sympathy I have towards him is literally this guy's whole life has been like in front of a camera. It has been like literally, right? I mean, he goes on TV when he's 2 years old, and then as he's growing up, the guy can't walk around. I mean, there was a point where he got into scuba diving a lot. And that makes a ton of sense because he was like the fish don't know who I am. Like that is probably the only place on the planet this guy can go and not be recognized or bothered or whatever. And he's like, you know, how many feet down into the ocean? Like it's crazy. So that's the only thing that like I am like, okay, like I get it, but this is very much a story of self-inflicted wounds.
Yeah, for me, I don't think it changes my opinion on him. It obviously reveals. He's never, like you said, from the moment he started walking, it was never a normal life at all. They had little glimpses of it here and there, but for the most part, he was always kind of destined to be in front of a camera or was going to be in front of a camera and never have any privacy. And it's ironic that his yacht's name is actually Privacy and probably the only place that he can kind of get away and be by himself or be with his family. So yeah, I don't have sympathy. Like I don't feel bad for him. I part of it, I am empathetic towards just because like, you know, he's never gone to like a grocery store and just been able to buy a banana without getting like mauled. Like I don't know. That's just the life that he's lived, and the one that it's kind of evolved into, which you feel bad for, because that sounds so stressful all the time, and you're always kind of held up to I guess like you're idolized and looked up to, and every step you take is going to be judged. And unfortunately, he took a lot of bad steps and missteps that were judged and going to stick with him forever. And like, there was a part where he talks about explaining it to his kids. Like that's where I feel, I mean, that's gotta be one of the hardest conversations to have over and over again, because I feel for like Charlie and Sam, like they'll learn about this eventually. And those are just difficult, extremely difficult conversations to have.
Especially because you have to figure out, okay, what age do we want to talk about this? Because if they Google my name, they're going to find out. If they type Tiger Woods into the internet, they're going to find out. Someone at school is going to say something to them. Yes. Okay. That is definitely like the shittiest part of all of this, is that he now has to explain this to his children. And that's obviously terrible.
He has to explain quite a lot. And yeah, it's unfortunate, and kind of goes back to the PNC. Like, this is, we know what Tiger was through, and now Charlie's in front of a camera at age 10 too, and people are doing the same thing. And it just, not maybe not that to that degree, but I mean, there was a lot going on there with comparisons. And it just, you don't want to start this cycle again. I don't know. It's just, it's weird. It's strange to be just the comparisons between Tiger and Charlie, kind of, I don't know. We don't have to talk about that, but it's a slippery slope.
Sure. The thing that throughout that whole, at least the second part, that I was just so, I don't know what the word, surprised, shocked, appalled. I don't know. The National Enquirer, dude. So they get this story.
Oh, that guy was
weasel. Like a weasel. That's exactly right. He was licking his chops. Like he was thrilled to have dirt on somebody, right? Like that's what he lives for.
Loves, you know, ruining people's lives.
Like he got the call that we have this on Tiger, and he lights up, and I'm like, oh my God. And then, you know, first of all, so they trade this, you know, the Perkins waitress for this shoot on Men's Fitness, on the cover of Men's Fitness, right?
That's, and then they pretty much start stalking him.
Yes. Then they follow him everywhere he goes, and everywhere Rachel Yucatel goes for like years until they catch him in what, Australia together or whatever. And like, yeah, literally like in the elevator with her, seeing what room she goes into, like that, like after you signed this deal for like this one piece of information, you're going to go try to get this another piece of information. Like that was just nuts. Crazy.
Like, they should have known that, you know, the National Enquirer wasn't going to really stop, but like some of the greasy pictures of Tiger at the club, like through like crowds of people, like this blurry photo, they had photos of him doing anything and everything that could have been, you know, added into this story to make this piece come to life. And yeah, that I didn't realize the Australian Masters was when it kind of all went south. A low-key event in like November, and Tiger needed Rachel down there, which is, again, maybe goes back to the relationship they actually did have, and it was probably stronger than just an affair. But yeah, to stalk them to travel and follow them until, you know, she walked into Tiger's hotel room to say that, you know, we got you now, this is it. Right. It's a lot of work, but I don't know what the business of paparazzi and that is all about, but yeah.
Apparently pretty good if you can,
Good.
Tiger Woods and something, if you can pay the expenses of following him around for a couple of years. You know, it does kind of, you know, at the last 20 minutes or so does really at least try to focus on the return, the upward swing a bit. It's Tiger winning the Masters in 2019. You get the bit from Jim Nance, a return to glory. You get all of that. And I think what we've noticed, at least over the past couple of years, is the on-course version of Tiger is very different, right? I mean, he would never smile. Yeah. He would never give away a tip to anybody. He would now he's kind of buddy-buddy with these guys. You see him more. The thing he did with Kevin Na when he walked in that butt, he would have never, ever done. Like, no. So you are seeing a different version of at least on-course Tiger as he's now, you know, over 40.
And a lot of it, you know, he hit rock bottom there. I would say that that's the whole video of him in getting like pulled over, arrested, the DUI, like that was, he said he was in Orange County. Like he was an absolute, that was, and he probably would, if you asked him, he'd probably say that's like, you obviously would never answer, but that's probably rock bottom for him. And definitely a huge, huge wake up call. And it's almost bred new life into him in these last few years. And it, yeah, like you said, that I didn't, you know, I laughed at that Kevin Na thing, but I didn't really, when you think about actually what he's doing in that moment is something that Tiger for, you know, 20 years before would never think about doing on a golf course in the heart of competition. So yeah, we're getting a new side of him now where he smiles, where he has friends on tour. It looks like he has friends on tour. A completely different animal now.
You know what I kind of got a kick out of was the disdain for Phil Mickelson, who is
about to bring that up. Yeah. That's one of my favorite part was his mom is like the killer.
Yeah.
Like she was the one that instilled like, you know, don't just beat these guys, but step on their throats. And the fact that they're, what was it? Final round of 2001 Masters.
That sounds about right.
Where I could be wrong. It was a final round of one of them, but Tiger and Phil were together. And at the time, Phil was a little rounder in shape and Tiger looks like he just stepped out of the gym. And the fact that Tiger's mom calls him Hefty Mickelson.
I audibly laughed
when I heard that because that's just like a level of like almost hatred towards a rival of Tiger's.
I mean, it is kind of interesting, right? I mean, is anybody more talented, just gifted talent than Phil Mickelson, right?
Exactly,
I mean, if you are Tiger, and you're working that hard and this guy's like competing and winning a lot, like that might be bothersome. And like, yeah, I get it. And to hear that, to hear the nickname Hefty, like that was kind of brilliant. Like I thought that was a great moment of like, and I also think that Tiger and a lot of top athletes do this, right? Like they want the chip on their shoulder, right? I mean, Brooks does this. Any comment you make, he's like, okay, throw it in the feeder. Like I'm gonna bring this out later. Like to be able to focus his energy on Phil as the villain, as the guy who's like, he shouldn't be winning. He's not working hard enough for this. I'm gonna go out and put my foot on his throat. Like I think he looks for stuff like that.
Yeah, same with like, that's pretty much what the entire Last Dance was about. It was MJ just collecting any piece of dirt on someone or using it as motivation. Yeah, a coach
didn't say hi to him at dinner, and he was I got to beat him in the finals.
I remember that. Yeah, exactly. So Tiger, I guess, was in a way like that with Phil, even though I don't know if Phil said something, but just the aura of Phil just irked the Woods family, and Tiger just had to go out there and kick his ass.
That is absolutely hilarious.
I love the my favorite nugget of the entire documentary was the fact that Tiger pulled over on the highway in Toronto. We got a shout out.
Oh, there you go.
So Tiger, I guess on the way back from Glen Abbey, probably in 2000, had a swing thought and tells Stevie Williams, pull over. I need to go. And then gets out of the car and just starts working on whatever it was. So I'm thinking there's someone here in Canada says that they saw Tiger Woods on the side of the highway. No one ever believed them their entire lives. This documentary comes out and goes, ha, I told you.
Validated that story. I told you 25 years ago I saw this, or whatever, 20 years ago. That's so good. Overall, EPAT, I mean, listen, it's a HBO documentary, so I think it was very well produced. I think it was very well put together. I think it was a great story. Whether you like the story or not, it appeared to be very factual, right? I did not find it to be salacious. I did not find it to be slander or anything like that. And I thought it was a good story.
What part of it could be false? Like, I don't even know what part of it could be inaccurate.
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, that's where Tiger's agent said salacious, but maybe, I don't know, maybe some of the details about the actual affairs or whatever, it might be incorrect, but I don't see why any of those people on there would have a reason to lie about it. So it is one side of the story. It'd be incredible to get Tiger to talk about it. I mean, like, that would be this. I don't think it'll ever happen, but
no.
maybe in Tiger's like final few years, he'll have a revelation where he needs to tell his whole story. But
you know what he needs to do? He needs to go broke. If he was broke, he would sell a book deal or he'd sell like a documentary deal. That's the only way you'd get this story out of him.
I don't know. Tiger, what, he hit a billion dollar athlete. So right. I don't know if he'll go broke.
But that's the only way you'd ever get it, which in turn is to say 0% you're ever getting this story.
Even if they had, it would be interesting to get Phil's thoughts on it. Maybe some other people on the tour, like some people who are close to him now.
Nota Begay.
Yeah, Nota Begay. Like anyone like of that in his inner circle to tell some of this story, just to know what kind of was going on in Tiger's side during all of this. But that'll never happen. As we've seen, the only people who are talking are the ones who no longer talk to Tiger. So it just is what it is, but definitely like for people to say they like were going to not watch it or thought it was, you know, over the top. I don't agree with any of those sentiments.
I agree. Okay.
Anything Rory else? McIlroy might be back. This might be the year of Rory.
If Rory shoots a bogey-free 8-under round in his first round of 2021, oh man, I got the warm and fuzzies. I got him. It was beautiful.
This is like I mentioned this in my newsletter. Just Rory starting the year in January in Dubai and on the European tour just feels a lot more natural. Like it makes him like European again in a way. Like, Rory just came, won twice in the Middle East, and now he's coming to the Players. He's showing up for whatever, the Genesis. Like, In a Ryder Cup year, I feel like we need like Rory doing some absolute damage on a European tour and then just shows up to the PGA strutting his stuff.
So next week's Farmers, right? So Rory, those guys usually don't come back from that, right? They don't come back and play the next week. So Rory's not playing Farmers next week?
I don't think so. I think I could be wrong. It'll be interesting to see who does play, but they do have another tournament in Dubai next week.
But I mean, Rory's obviously played Torrey before, and
maybe they don't want to like see it.
Yeah, it's true. But it's rare. Like I can't, like Patrick Reed's the only guy who would play over there and then fly back the next week and play. It's pretty rare for those guys.
Yeah. I think they got like the Saudi international. So a lot of guys will fly out for that. I think Brooks being one of them, Reed, Bryson.
Yeah.
They'll be there. But, next week is almost like a little US Open tune-up for some of the guys. I know Koepka came out this week and said, he's pretty much using next week as preparation for the US Open. And then they asked, well, okay, why are you playing in the desert or whatever it is, the American Express? I want to be ready to be ready in a way. So like knock off the rust and then go see what his real game's like at Torrey Pines. So if you're expecting anything out of Brooks this week, I would lower those expectations.
All right. Well, we'll see that right there. Eric Patterson at EPAT Golf. You can find his work on The Score. You can find his quick nine, which I will, of course, link in the description below. EPAT, thanks, my dude.
Anytime, Rick. We'll talk next week. Torrey, this used to be in your backyard, not anymore.
I know. And you know what? I don't think they're doing fans. I had both a pass and tickets, but I don't think that's happening. And now I'm 4 hours away, so yeah, I will not be there.
This is where we met for the first like a week ago. Wow, that was good memory.
A year ago next week
we crossed paths for the first time.
How about that?
A lot has changed since.
I was gonna say the world's very different. But I can't wait till we can get back out to another event.
That'll be great.
All right, that'll do it. This has been 300 Yards to Unknown. See ya.